Good evening. I presume this is the first talk of the year, is it? Where do you have some talks before?
Three talks before.
Three talks before, okay. But I think you gave me a very heavy job. Because what the topic, the thing on suffering and the diagnosis of suffering is what the Buddha taught for 45 years. So I've got to really put the thing into a nutshell. I don't think it's a nutshell. I got to put it into a very small little shell, maybe a petty husk. And if you look at it, the Buddha taught this sort of suffering business for nearly his whole life. Everything he taught has got to do with human suffering. So I'm not trying to make this talk a very traditional one. I'm going to talk through all these holy books and all these things. But the holy books remain our guide. The scripture is still our guide. If you look at how the Buddha came across this suffering, you've got to go back 2,500 years ago. The Buddha was born, then after that, according to the story, the Buddha was born, and then many things happened in his life, and then he just gave up his lay life, and then he became a mendicant or whatever, or a holy person, and he tried to find solution to a lot of his questions. But eventually, instead of learning from other people, he found the answer by himself. So basically, that's the story of the Buddha. And if you look at it from the modern day perspective, you can say the Buddha was born in a very comfortable surrounding. The parents were has got a lot of resources, rich and powerful and all this. And one of the things which happened during his birth is that he was predicted to become either a world teacher or a great teacher, or becoming a world ruler. So the father decided not to allow him to be a religious person, so spoiled him by giving him a lot of material things. So he got a lot of material things, very comfortable, very much like some of you guys, being spoiled rotten by the father or mother. Some I know, some are not spoiled, but a lot of them are. They give you, you want a car, you get a car. And then you want a flat, you get a unit. So some of them are like that. Well, in the case of the Buddha, he did not ask for it, but the father gave him in the hope that he gives up his wish to become a holy person. Now, what actually happened in his life is, according to the stories, he saw a lot of things which people cannot give him a solution. Things like, why do we grow old? Why do we fall sick? And why do we have to die? That's a very simple question. Most of us don't even think about it. But I think the Buddha is born with a higher intelligence than most people. And the way his mind works is a lot different from the mind of ordinary people. During his time, there were a lot of philosophers and people who were looking for things, asking a lot of questions. But the questions are not relevant to life. You're asking whether there's a God or not, whether it's just asking questions on karma, on all sorts of things. It's just the same thing with a lot of religious people nowadays. They talk about things which are not necessarily relevant to our life. What the Buddha found is that we have got a lot of problems in our life. To begin with, the problems to deal with, why we have to be sick, why we have got to grow old, why do they have to die. And then he thought about there are certain things which also causes a lot of anguish, a lot of frustrations and all this. Namely, it's just, why do we have to put up with things which we do not like? And why can't we get away from, why can't we be with things which we like all the time? I'm quite sure that there's a problem with most of you, isn't it? I would say all of you. Do you like to attend lectures or not? Come a spring day, beautiful, you want to go, you know, you want to go to Kuji Beach to enjoy yourself. But I got to attend lecture at 8:30. So that's not something which you like to do, isn't it? But you still got to attend lectures. And when after attending lectures, you're given assignments to do. So again, do you like to work on your assignments or not? It takes a lot of time for you to watch TV, to go and talk to your friends and so on. So it becomes a problem to you, isn't it? Only thing we don't know that there's a problem. The sort of things, you know, I don't like to do it, yet I've got to do it. And then later this year, you got to sit for exams. I don't think, how many like to sit for exams? None. So we got to still got to put up with it. Now, this is the thing, when you don't like and you still got to do it, that is that sort of feelings you get in your emotional feelings you get in your mind. That is what is called suffering. We call it as suffering. And of course, with things you like, you can't, if you like some food, you find that you can only eat just one serve of it. You eat the second serve, what happens? Assuming you like laksa or you like something, right? You eat that bowl of laksa, after that you eat a second bowl, then what happens to the third bowl? You can't get in. Even though you like it, you still can't put it in. And for most of us, after the second bowl, the third bowl becomes yucky, no more. Right? So this is the thing. We change there are a lot of things which we like, we cannot get enough of, and all. Sometimes the things which we like becomes the thing which we do not like anymore. These are the very plain and simple examples. And these are the sort of things which the Buddha talked about. Sometimes you don't like certain people and yet you got to be with them. You don't like certain lecturers and yet you got to attend his lectures. Isn't it? So this is some of the problems, a practical thing. So you can say that the Buddha is a very practical teacher. He looks into all these sort of things which his contemporary during the 2500 years ago never thought about. They were thinking a lot about things like metaphysics and all these things. It's not relevant to us. Think about gods, think about the power of gods, how gods act and all these things. It's not relevant to us. What is relevant to us even nowadays is our problem in life. And the problems we encounter in life is what is termed as suffering in Buddhism. And the word suffering sometimes gives us very, you know, horrible ideas, because you've seen people who suffer. But suffering actually is more than that, what he talks about suffering. So we use just one word to describe it. And the word cannot be changed. It's a Pali word, it's also a Sanskrit word, which means unsatisfactoriness, suffering. And in the late 19th century, they translated as ill. And every one of us would have it. Can you think of any of your dukkha? If I tell you, just if you got a pen and paper, just write down five of the dukkhas you have. Very soon you fill up the paper if you do it. Now, we have got a lot of things which are bothering us in life. And that is what we call dukkha. We got to do things we don't like. We got to fall sick. You know that you got to die one day. Right? In history of humankind, there is not one single person who is exempted from death. If you read anybody being exempted from death, then you are reading a fairy tale. Everyone has got to die. Because our body just come to a certain stage, it just go. And that's what we call impermanence. As you go, it's natural for these sort of things to be around. Why do we have to die? Some people will invent reasons for it. Right? They invent reasons that because you have bad karma, therefore you die. Or it's because some big powerful things up in heaven decided you die on the day, therefore you die. But the Buddha don't talk about that. We don't entertain these sort of ideas. We talk about there's a limit to the way we live. And you've got to understand that. And when you're born a human being, you, no matter how much you take care of yourself, there is this lifespan. And we have got to die one day. Same thing with falling sick. I'm quite sure all of you have fallen sick before. Big sickness, small sickness. It can be anything at all. Up to a toothache, or when you fall down, you break a leg or something like that. Now, when you are sick, how do you feel? Do you feel happy or not? So I don't think you are. Just think of the time when you are sick. Now, why are you not happy? Why? When you get flu, why are you not happy? When you get something wrong and then you got to go to the hospital, why are you not happy?
Because you suffer.
Because we are suffering and we don't know why we suffer, isn't it? Now there's and we got to understand that sickness is there for us. When you exist as a human being, there will be time when you are sick. Just like death, no one can be exempted from sickness. You got to fall sick sometime in your life. And especially when, just before dying, somebody has got to be sick. I don't know, I thought maybe, sometimes I think, in the past I think that that people just grow old and they die for no reason. What they say, die naturally. But I checked with one of my medical friends. He says, no. You got to have something wrong with your organs or whatever. There's a shutdown, therefore you die, isn't it? So that's natural. You come to a certain time, we have got to die. So okay, we settle that. Sickness, we settle death. And growing old. Now when you are young, you don't know what it's like to grow old. But when you reach my age, you know. When you wake up in the morning, the bones creak sometimes. It's not only creaking, but you get that sort of pain. You can see the doctor and say, it's aging. A lot of things I see my doctor, he told me, it's because you grow old, that's why. And that's just... Now we feel that growing old. And sometimes I think that growing old is very nice. Because sometimes you get... because when I went back to Malaysia, I went on a train, and there's no seats there. So this very nice young man, he stood up and said, "Uncle, there, sit on, take my seat." I'm so happy about it, I get a free seat. But is it worth it or not? When I compare to all the aches and pains I got to suffer. And just now when I was bowing to Buddha, I lost my balance. That's what happens when you're old. So, now, if you do not understand the cause of all these things, right? Where do all these sort of things come from, then therefore it becomes a problem. Because we lack understanding. And for those of you who heard a lot of Buddhist talk, this lack of understanding is what we call ignorance or delusion. Right? And there is a Buddhist word for it. Call it avijja. Avijja is the actual meaning of avijja is not clear. But we translate as ignorance. The Chinese got it right. Any of you who know about Chinese Buddhism? The way the Chinese Buddhism used for the word is not clear. And we are not clear of what? It's not because we are not clear, we do not understand the cause of this suffering, where it comes from. A lot of my friends always blame something. There's three people who believe in supernatural things. And one of my friends say, "Oh, you suffer because God wants you to suffer." That I think it's very bad, very rude to blame God for it, isn't it? You suffer, and then you can blame somebody to put the suffering on you. The Buddha doesn't blame God. The Buddha says, you are responsible for your own suffering. Who has got avijja? You have got avijja. But because you don't want to understand, therefore you put somebody there and blame that person, isn't it? It's human nature to blame others. But in our case, the Buddha taught us not to blame others. Look at you yourself, but don't blame yourself, don't get unhappy with yourself either. Otherwise you commit suicide, isn't it? So, look at where it all comes from. So, I'll talk about it in a few minutes time. But let's look for all these problems. You don't like to attend lectures, you got to attend lectures. You don't like to do assignments, you got to do assignments. While you're doing assignments, what is happening in your mind? Even think of doing the assignment, think of the coming exams and all these things. You start to have the sort of fear coming up. You've got the sort of the aversion. Right? And sometimes people say, I hate waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning to attend, to go and work at 8 o'clock. Right? So, again, we give in to hatred which arises in us. You want to hate things. So, it's established by the Buddha that it is a fact that when you are living, existing as a human being, you will have problems. And these problems are things like, we resolve to a primary level. What are they? Your fears, your worries, your disappointments, jealousy and all these things, the sort of negative emotional things which you generate in your mind. And nobody gives you your fear. They might increase your fear, but you got to fear yourself, isn't it? You got to have the fear, you got to feed the fear yourself. When you're born, look at babies, they don't fear anything. I remember when I was born in a family of very strong skeptics, and I never believed in ghosts. I think all the Asians believe in ghosts, isn't it? And to a certain extent, some of the English believe in ghosts. I got a ghost-believing monk whom I know, and he always talks about ghosts. So, from age zero, or as a born, to age about four, I never believed in ghosts. We live in a very big terrace house, and only a few of us live in there. You know, my own family, five of us. And at night, I got to go up to the bedroom to sleep. It's upstairs. And you just got a small little light, leading upstairs. And at 8 o'clock, Mom would say, Jim, go and sleep. So I just go there and sleep. And then, happily, we moved to another town. And at night, when my parents want to go out, they left me they sent me to a friend's place, who happens to be an old lady. And she was supposed to babysit us. And you know, when kids of 3 or 4 years old, they're very unruly, very restless and so on. So the old ladies keep on telling us ghost story. You don't sleep, run, this ghost, this and that. And all the ghosts can be anything. Then when we heard the story, she said, you don't sleep, the ghost will come. So we put our bedsheet over and then we fall asleep. So that happened for about 6 months, and my family moved back to our old house. And the story of the ghost stays there already. At night, my mom says, go up and sleep. Young Jim there shivering away. Even sometimes mom take out the little rattan cane. I'm more scared of the ghost than my mother or the cane. See how these sort of things coming from outside can influence us. And we are subjected to a lot of this sort of beliefs and so on. And that adds on to our suffering. And for the when the Buddha says suffering, it means all these things, your fears. Fears can be increased and fears can be taken off. And I can tell you that after all those years of being scared of ghosts, when I become a serious Buddhist myself, then I read in the scripture that this, all the dhammas are made by the mind. Right? And when he talks about dhamma, it means all phenomena are made up by the minds. So now, at night when I walk across the cemetery, the first thought I have is ghosts. The second thought I have is all dhammas are made up from the mind. And the ghost disappears. All the ghosts disappear. You see how powerful it is, understanding. You got to understand that whatever it is made up of our imagination, or is put up by the mind. And that makes us go into the second noble truth. Are you clear about the first noble truth? Suffering. It's very simple. Suffering. Anything at all. You break your toenail, suffering. Your girlfriend says goodbye to you, or your boyfriend says goodbye to you, suffering. You can't get what you want, suffering. You get too much of what you want, suffering. And we are not trying to avoid this suffering. We are trying to understand this suffering so that we can do something to make us suffer a lot less. And that is the teachings of the Buddha for 45 years. How to get out of this suffering? Now, denying suffering itself is no use. Trying to blame others for your suffering doesn't stop your suffering, isn't it? You say that poor old God up there, saying, God, why do you make me suffer? God keeps quiet, doesn't tell you anything. You keep on suffering. So, we got to do something to it. And that's what the Buddha preached for quite a long time. In fact, after he became enlightened, he spent 45 years of his time trying to teach people how to get out of suffering. The first thing he knew that suffering is not caused by external thing. Although the external things do have an influence on you, but it's mainly caused by the first person himself. When you're talking about Buddhism, it's always a first person religion. It's not about second or third or multiple persons. So, how do you go around getting all this suffering? The Buddha said, he called it the accumulation of suffering. And the second noble truth is called the dukkha samudaya, coming together of suffering. When you look at what we are, we exist as a human being. Now, don't talk about animals, don't talk about other supernatural things. Look at you, look at me. What are we made up of? Very basic. We have got a body, isn't it? In our body, we have got that sense organs, as you put it, we can put it in a simple way. You've got eyes, don't you? You've got nose, you've got ears, you've got a tongue, you've got your body, other than these four. And then you've got that thing which we call mind or brain, right? The functioning of the brain. So these are the things which are receptacles for things which will generate suffering. And the eyes don't create the suffering. The eyes, working with the mind, will create the suffering. The nose don't create suffering. The nose, working with the mind, will create the suffering. I'll explain to you a bit more than that a bit later, maybe in the next minute or so. But it's because you got a body and you got a mind working within your body. therefore you got into trouble. If you don't have a body, what happens? You don't exist. If you don't have a mind, then don't worry about learning about Buddhism anymore, because you have a dead body. So with these two working, and we do not want to go into the details of the mechanism of how this works, but roughly, it's true what we see, it's true what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, and how the other parts of the body gets the sensation the other parts of the body get, as well as the brain thinking with the ideas and thoughts we have, that we get into the state of suffering. Now, for example, I've got eyes. I look at the Buddha image. Right? What's happening in my mind? My eyes comes into contact with the Buddha. Then I was born a Buddhist. Isn't it? Buddhist, what do Buddhists think of the Buddha? Buddha image, rather. It's very nice, as you go and bow to it. Then we look at it, it's very beautiful, it's made of wood and all this. So I got these ideas start to form in my mind. And when the ideas form in my mind, it's a pleasant idea. I like that. So that's where I start my problem. I like that. Then you might think that liking is very good, isn't it? But no. Because I like this, I want to own it, the next thing. So I ask you guys for it. Can you give me that Buddha image or not? Because the liking is so much that I must acquire the thing. So I ask for the Buddha image or the Buddha statue. What would be your question be? There are two things you can answer me only. One is to say, no, Jim, this is the universe property. Because they used it for every Dharma talk and all this thing. Actually, you changed the Buddha, didn't you? It wasn't the same one as I know for 30 years. Anyway.
Change once.
Yeah, I think it's a bit smaller, but I still like this one. So I'll ask you, and then you say no. What happens when you say no? I get disappointed, isn't it? Now, if I don't know how to deal with that disappointment, then I get more problem. What will happen in my mind if I don't know how to deal with my disappointments? I have been teaching in Hindibats for 30 years. They are just so much ungrateful to me. Why can't they give me a Buddha image and then later on buy another one for them? And so on. All the thoughts come in, isn't it? Yeah, you guys are all a stingy group. So okay, next time I won't talk to you all again. See, and while I'm thinking of all this thing, am I happy or not? Am I calm or not? My mind will be very, very agitated. And for what reason? Because I saw the thing and I liked it. And that is the cause of suffering for most of us. Now, going the other way, if you say you give it to me, supposing all of you agree, okay, Jim is a... We respect him very much. He's been teaching for so long. For his services to us, we give it to him. I take it, I got more problems. I got to make sure that it's not stolen. I got to make sure that the thing got to be properly packed so that it doesn't fall from my car and break the image and all these things. And then when I reach home, I got to store it properly. There's no end of problems again. Because I have got to be very careful with it, and I spend a lot of my attention on that, taking care of that Buddha image, and sometimes it will be at the expense of me doing some more useful thing. After all, it's dead. It's made of a piece of wood, isn't it? But because it's carved so nicely, because I've got my Buddhist belief, therefore I like it. When I like it, I want it, and so on and so forth. Can I go without it or not? And why do I want it so badly? It's because of my attachment. The Buddha's words, attachment. because we are attached to things, and the stronger we are attached to things, then the more problems we have. And the more problems we have, the more suffering we have. So this is the cause of suffering. The cause of suffering is because of the working of the mind along with the body. I'll give you another example. You're supposed to relax and walk in the park. How many of you do that relaxation thing? We do relax a lot of times, isn't it? Just go walk in the park. You're supposed to relax. You walk, 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 and all of a sudden, drunk, squelch, you know, that squashy feeling. And then you look, there's dog poo on it. Stepping on a dog's excrement. You're supposed to relax. But when you look at it, what happens? Now, there are two things which happens, right? One is what you see, and the other one is what you smell. It's affecting you. Right? And then when you step on it, then you get upset. When I get upset, I used to step on dog poo because I go for walks very often. When I step on it, the days before I get more serious with my Buddhism is, look at that, some idiots. And the first thing is, first thing you blame the dog, the next thing I say, not fair to blame the dog, it's a stupid owner. No, that's a thing when you bring a dog for a walk, when the dog puts something, you've got to use a, you know, put it in a bag or something and carry home with you. But these people never do. So you start to think about that and you start getting upset with that dog owner. And I get upset with the dog owner, I don't even know who it is, isn't it? And yet I get upset with him or her. And I'll get so upset that I spoil my whole morning walking in the park. I'm supposed to relax, but just because of that, stepping on the dog poo, I get upset. So you think I'm very clever or not? That's why the Buddha says we are deluded. That's why the Buddha says, no, we are not clear about things. What would the Buddha do if he steps on the dog poo? Right, with his enlightened mind. If you follow his teachings, he had said that. You step on the dog poo, you step on the dog poo, full stop. Isn't it? When you step on the dog poo, we do nothing but get upset, get angry, the dog poo won't go away. Right or not? So the best thing for you to do is I step on dog poo, what should I do next? Getting upset doesn't clean the whole thing. Just look for a tap or just look for a clean patch of grass, just drop your shoes there and then go home. But how many of us can do that or not? That's why, as human beings, we get suffering. And the suffering sometimes can be very, very strong. Sometimes we treat a lot of things, you know, very seriously. One of my work, I do give counseling to a lot of people too. And one day, this young man came and told me about his, you know, his girlfriend running away, and her new boyfriend is somebody uglier than him. He said, I can understand if his boyfriend is more good looking than I am, but she goes for the person who's uglier. Blah blah blah. Came and talked. No, how many of you have got girlfriends running away or boyfriends running away? How do you feel? So he pours out all his things. And then at one stage he was saying, no, Jim, sometimes, you know, I'm so depressed that I feel like killing myself. So what do you think we should tell him from the Buddhist point of view? No point saying, oh, Buddhists cannot commit suicide and all this. You take your killing, that doesn't work. So I did the best way I can. I just told him, now, young man, are you going to kill yourself for love which is no longer there or not? She doesn't love him anymore. And if he commits suicide, do you think he's clever, he's intelligent enough or not? So, it's very simple, isn't it? The solution. That's why the Buddha gave us a solution. If we were to just talk about suffering and just keep on thinking about suffering and do nothing about it, then Buddhism has got no use to you. But the Buddha did explain suffering and the cause of suffering and also the ending of suffering. How do you end your suffering? Because now, this is, goes into the third and the fourth noble truth. It's talk about the end of suffering. Now, in a lot of Buddhist, the traditional Buddhist teachings, we go into a lot of metaphysical things called Nibbana and on enlightenment, all this now. It's not practical to us. But we got to look into the cause. If the cause is to do with your mind working, with your body, with the, your sense bases and all this, then what is the best thing to do? In some holy books, they tell you, if your eyes offend you, pull it out. If your tongue offends you, just cut it off. What Gandhi says, if you keep on doing that, then people end up blind and deformed. The Buddha did not say do that. He did not even say close your eyes. Open your eyes, but be clear about things. That clarity of thinking is one of the important part of the Buddha's teaching. Now, just now we say avijja is not clear. Why is it not clear? Because you are born like that. All of us are born like that. We are born as human beings. No matter how clever we are, how intelligent we are, there are a lot of things we are, which we are still not clear. And a lot of things we, a lot of times we spend our mental energy into exploring things which are of little or no importance at all. But we tend to forget to look into our problems. We know that we have problems, and we expect others to come and solve our problems. So, when the Buddha taught us, he says, go back to your problem. So you know you have got what sort of problems you have. It can be anything at all. And we know that all the problems are caused by your mind working together with your sense bases. There are six of them. For those who have gone into the dependent origination and all these things, you should know. It's lower. Now, when you talk about this body, it means minus this four, okay? And then we call it, I'll use the word brain, the workings of the brain, right? It's the working of it. Actually, in the, most of the books, they say it's mind. Now, these ones, it gives us the able to see. This one is from here. You can also say that the Buddha is 2,500 years ago, when people are not clear about a lot of things, he can come up with a lot of diagnosis. This is the diagnosis which he did before. Find out the problem, find out the cause of a problem, then you treat the problem. And that's what his thinking is. So the problem is suffering. Then you start to look, where does the problem come from? What caused the problem? And this is the second noble truth. What caused it? What caused your suffering? It's through the workings of the body and the mind. And the working of the mind is through your sense bases, what you see, what you hear, and so on. And when you see something, I won't go too deeply into that sort of things, but when you see something, what happens? When we see something, we get an idea about something, isn't it? And the idea is whether you like it or you don't like it. It's just the like and don't like which gives you a lot of problems. I see the Buddha image, I like it, I got problem, as I told you. If I see the Buddha image, I don't like it, I also got problem. And I know of a lot of people, when they see the Buddha image, they don't like it at all. I know you got some friends who always tell you, you Buddhists are praying to idols, isn't it? And the job they do with idols is smash the idols. So if I belong to that, I can't stand it. I must do something about it. I must chop the thing up. He's got problem. So, what to do with it? What to do with it? The Buddha told us, understand what it is. So you must learn how to understand. I didn't go very much into detail, but just roughly what it is. Understand that you have got all these activities going around in you, and also understand that most of these activities do not stay for a long time. It just changes, right? It's got to change. And why you grow old? Because of change. Why do you fall sick? Because of change. You are healthy in one moment, you fall sick another moment. And then when you fall sick, you get better again, right? So life goes on and on and on. Whatever you think now, you change your thinking in a very short moment because of the other informations which we gather, right? And what you see also changes, right? When I look at this thing, I keep on saying, this is a tape recorder. And then I know that, I got to understand that what it was 5 minutes ago and what it is now are different. Scientifically, you can prove it. Although it looks the same, it will still change. There is this thing of changing, whether it deteriorates, whether it improves or whatever. So life is like that. And it's because sometimes we are not used to that sort of thing. Or it's not that we are not used to, but it's because we do not like the change. You hold on to something and I don't want you to change. And therefore, you get problem. So, you've got to understand the workings of the mind together with impermanence. And this is a very important thing. The Buddha talks more about impermanence than anything else. But everything changed. I like to be like you all, young people. In my 20s and 30s, I could do anything. I could play badminton, I could play tennis, I could go for swimming, I could jump, go rock climbing and all this. But now there's limit to it. Now if I don't know how to deal with that problem, I get very upset. And then what happens to me? I become what they call in Australia, a grumpy old man. Everything is no good. All you young people are no good. You young people are no good. Like I got a few friends who are really getting into the grumpy old man stage. Because he always find problem with young people. You guys, what happens when you have the phone? I go to bus and everything, everybody looking at the phone, isn't it? Huh? And he'd be tapping on the phone, looking at the phone, tapping. He always comments, he says, young people nowadays, right? The words old people always use, young people nowadays, they do that and that and that. Right? They always step on the phone, they do nothing. Then he complained to me, the wrong person to complain to. I said, my friend, they are doing what they want to do. It's because you are jealous of them, therefore you are making all sorts of comments like that, isn't it? So you are not able to deal with your problem. Therefore, you start to get angry, you get to get upset, frustration. Right? And that is suffering. If we can understand it a lot better. Sometimes, you can be under stress. Right? Especially when you got 10 or 15 assignments to do at the same time. Right? So you're under stress. And if you don't know how to deal with this sort of problems, then it flares out. You quarrel with your flatmate, you quarrel with everybody. Sometimes you see a dog by the roadside, you kick the dog too. So, but the Buddha says, try to understand it. Try to understand the problem starts with you. And maybe your lack of planning is the problem. Your lack of concentration or focusing on doing your work is the problem. So just look for it and try to adjust yourself. And the adjusting ourselves starts with understanding. Now, generally, not just for one problem, but it's general to solve our problem. Try to understand the whole thing first, where the problem comes from. And when you understand the problem, just put it through and just think about it. Just try to figure out what sort of actions you're going to do. Then after that, try to make your mind, relax your mind in such a way that you are able to deal with the problem. So generally, the Buddha put in about 8 of this, 8-fold path, as we call it, but it's the way to regulate our life. You understand? Try to understand things, try to understand the cause of the problems and so on. Try to understand the impermanence. And then once you start to understand it, then go into the stage of living your life as to create more understanding. And the way to understand it is through mindfulness practice. Anybody talk about mindfulness before? No? So that's another thing you should get one some of your speakers to talk about. Right? The mindfulness is to be mindful of, you know, how your body comes, how your sense bases come into contact with things and cause these problems. Right? Now, when you walk in the park, you are mindful. If you are mindful, you avoid the dog poo, isn't it? And you are not mindful, you step on the dog poo. Then what happens? You're even less mindful, you start to get upset with it. But you are mindful, and you say, okay, getting upset doesn't work. So let getting upset go away. And then you start to clean your shoes, and then continue your walk. Now, when you're mindful, you are able to let go of a lot of these things. And letting go is a very important concept in trying to solve our problem. You know the problem, but if you cling on to the problem gets bigger. You learn how to let go of the unnecessary thing which causes a problem, then it gives you more mental energy to be able to solve your problem. When you step on a dog excrement, you got a problem. But you start to get angry, is that a way to solve the problem or not? It's not practical. The practical Buddha says, know that you step on it, do something to it. So you go, getting angry is not what you should do. Cleaning your shoes is what you should do. Right. Same thing when you are late for your assignment. What happened? Sometimes, you know, when we say, okay, after certain lectures, you know, the lecturer or whoever will say, okay, that's your thing, you can do these things. And hand it next week. They don't say hand it tonight. Has any lecturers told you hand the assignments in tonight or not? Hand it next week or 2 weeks time. What do you do? The first night you go, okay, never mind, I still got another 6 nights. Then the next night they do something else. After that something else. Until the night before. And then you panic. You get upset. See, you know? Then the Buddha, what does the Buddha teach us? Be clear about it. Know that you start on the first night, isn't it? If you do not start on the first night, on the seventh night you get problem. So you understand that, then you regulate your life in such a way as to avoid all this problem. So when you look at the teachings of Buddha, one of the very important part of it is what we call the first thing you do. Avoid evil. Now, when we say avoid evil, people will say, I shouldn't smoke, I shouldn't gamble, I shouldn't drink and all this. Right? They may be part of the evil. But you know, a lot of the evil are created by our mind. Like being lazy, right? Being irresponsible, and so on. Getting upset is an evil as well. So try to avoid that sort of thing. The other thing is do good. Do good means, you know, you do something which will improve your the quality of life and so on. Let's do good. But the most important of all, the third thing which is important in Buddhism is purify your mind. Purify your mind means start to train your mind in such a way that you can avoid evil easily, you can do good easily. So basically, that's very simple. Any questions? What do you expect me to, were you expecting to talk like this, or you want me to say Four Noble Truths is number one, number two, number three? You see, what I'm saying is, we are actually dealing with very practical things. During the Buddha's time, he stood out among his contemporaries, because he talked about things which nobody has thought about. Right? And these are the sort of things. It's relevant 2,500 years ago, is also relevant now. Right? And I can tell you that a lot of the teachings in the Buddhist scripture is used as a, I wouldn't say a reference, but used as a guide for a lot of modern day psychology. You ask any of those psychology students, they can tell you a lot of them comes from the Buddhist scripture, especially the things that deal with the mind. Why do people get depressed? Why do people get upset, angry, and all these things? You know, sometimes the anger is so great that they got to see a psychologist. They got to explain to them. They got to tell you what it is. And when people start to understand things, then the level of anger, the level of fear, and everything will go down. Now, I told you about my fear, right? Fear of ghosts, isn't it? Now, if I were to go and look for the traditional cure, right, especially in the Asian tradition, what do when you're scared of ghosts? They give a little Buddha image, wear on your body, so that whenever you feel a ghost coming, hold on to it, isn't it? How many Thais are around here? The Thais and Malaysians and the Indonesians are very good at that, isn't it? But what did the Buddha teach us? Understanding that a lot of the fears are created by your mind. It's called irrational fears. And once you understand the irrational fears, a lot of our problems are gone. And that is what we call getting rid of our suffering. Because we do a lot of things we want to believe. And the Buddha never encouraged us to believe. The Buddha told us, investigate and look for the solution. The investigation is very important. And we don't go outside to investigate. We investigate about our own clinging, our own attachment. And you can see it's very simple. Very, very simple teaching. You don't have to go through all those holy books. But you start to go into yourself. And in order to get into understand yourself, we got to do what we call mindfulness training. And in another part of the Buddhist teachings, there was this teachings to understand the mind. Understand how the mind works. What are the different steps which makes the mind churn around? Right? You don't get angry suddenly, isn't it? Or do you get angry suddenly? What I call it, hey, you idiot! People will start, no? What happens? Get angry straight away. But actually, you can see the development of the anger, although it happens in the moment, is much more complicated than that. What happens when you call somebody, say something which somebody doesn't like? The ears hear something, isn't it? And then the mechanism is when it hears something, there is a vibration in the eardrums, and then the thing which makes sense to the person, right? For you all, if I speak English to you all, you can understand. But suddenly if I speak, say, Russian or Croatian, then a lot of you wouldn't understand it. Maybe you all, none of you will understand it. Now, what happens when you don't understand the thing? You just don't register it. Not registering. He must be talking something else. What is he saying? I don't know. So you let him go and talk. Remember, he must be mad or something like that. You see? But things which we understand, we register. And this registering is the first step towards the suffering if you want to. So you register something, those words are rude. And when they are rude, you hold on to it. And you hold on to it, he has got no right to be rude to me. I'm such a nice person. Then your ego comes up. I'm such a nice person. How can he be rude to me? And then when somebody is rude to you, you get angry, isn't it? When somebody is nice to you, you get happy. That's our nature. So when somebody is rude to you, you get angry. When you start to get angry, you are already in suffering. Isn't it? I'm quite sure all of you got angry before by the looks of your face. So when you're angry next time, just try to experience the anger and try to know what anger is like. Normally when we get angry, we just either suppress the anger or let the anger burn us, or we transfer the anger to somebody else. Right? We express the anger. But next time when you're angry, just look. What happens when you're angry? Is it the burning feeling, or is it the cold, you're shivering and so on? Just be aware of it. And that is what we call mindfulness at a very top level. Just know it. And that knowing is the beginning of mindfulness. And of course I would recommend you to have, you know, to go and do some mindfulness meditation. And then you can be more certain about the where it all comes. Now, if you are, say supposing you're offering me a cup of tea, very nice of you to do that. You go and get the urn and everything. And then all of a sudden you walk, you trip, and then the tea flies around. How do you feel? It's not anger, you know. You don't feel angry, but you feel very embarrassed, isn't it? Embarrassment is another one of our suffering. Then what happens after that? Such a thing, I shouldn't have done this. It's very, you know, blah, blah, blah. You torture yourself with all these thoughts. But is it really necessary or not? After all, the drink is spilled. And if the Buddha were around, he tells you, don't worry about all these other things. Go and get something to mop up the thing. If the cup is broken, throw it away, isn't it? This is rational way of looking at problems. But no, for us, most of us, we feel bad about it. We do all these things. So you can see how we accumulate all this suffering. It's all out of our ignorance. So when we have problems, if we understand where the problem comes from, then it's much easier for us to deal with it. And when you deal with it, you got to deal with it in a very nice way. When you get a problem of spilling the thing, you must say, oh, sorry, that's good enough. But there's no point telling, oh, I'm so sorry, blah, 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 keep on going. It doesn't work. And nothing worse than torturing yourself and say, I shouldn't have done it, I'm very bad, and all these things. Because you are torturing yourself. So when you learn about mindfulness, you will be able to deal with it. Right? Any questions so far? No? Yes? Now, you touch on a very important question. How to be a good Buddhist? there'll be a lot of different explanation to how to be a good Buddhist. And usually when we have a religion, we try to practice the thing well. That is a very commendable thing. But are we doing it the right way or not? You look at it traditionally, what do we think of a good Buddhist? Yeah, usually religious people will think that those who are religious and very good religious people, regardless of what religion they are, they got a halo on their head, you know, and then they walk as if they are not in the world, like that. It's a holy and pious look. I come from a Muslim country, I know that too well. The people who are really religious, they are showing off. So we shouldn't show off our piousness. Now if we don't show off how religious we are, what can we do? I know a lot of Buddhists show off how. Some of them wear beads, you know. And then when come meditation, they're showing off, I know they show off people. They got a cushion, they sit like that and like that. Is it necessary or not? And sometimes a lot of them show up by, oh no, I'm a vegetarian. Not only vegetarian, I'm a vegan. Not only vegan, I don't eat the GM, the non-GM or whatever grains and all this, right? All those things, they try to show you. Now, don't do that if you are going to be a good Buddhist. Because there's a revolting Buddhist, not revolting. Yeah, it's a sort of a very repulsive, right? The best Buddhists do three things. I got to avoid evil, right? Now, a lot of people think that, I said that before, a lot of people think that evil means gambling and drinking alcohol and all this. It's not. It is one of them, but it's not the important thing. Avoid evil is to avoid this evil intention in you. When you talk about evil intention, meaning that we think bad about others, we want to do bad things to other people, or do bad things to ourselves, that is evil. And doing good, we do good to others, we do good to ourselves. Then purify the mind. If you just do good and avoid evil, by following what people tell you, then you become a follower. Now, you want to become a really good Buddhist, purify the mind. When the mind is purified, you get a lot clearer. You can think clearly. And then whatever good you do are really good. Can I answer your question the other way? Does it work? And this purifying the mind is the most important teachings of the Buddha. And to purify the mind, you got to understand the mind. Understand the workings. And once you understand the working, you know how the mind works so that we get a lot of this suffering. And when you understand how you suffer, then you know how other people will suffer. And you want to help them, that is true. That understanding, rather than saying, you shouldn't be doing all these things. Right? When your friend is angry, you could just tell him, don't get angry. Just keep on telling the person, don't get angry. You know what happens? You might end up being assaulted by the other person, isn't it? When people are angry, don't tell them, don't get angry. Understand the anger and steer them away from anger if you can. And that's what modern psychologists do, isn't it? But the Buddha has done that 2,500 years ago by making you understand yourself first, your anger, how you deal with the anger, then you deal with other people's anger. If you don't understand yourself, you cannot teach others to understand themselves. It's very important that way. And sometimes we tend to teach other people through books, through our scripture and all this, it doesn't work. Go and get the experience yourself and know yourself, understand yourself a lot better. Then it's the time you can start to understand others and give advice or do whatever you want. Right? Other questions? No? Now, this, in short, is what you talk about, the noble truth. I don't think you expected this out of this kind of talk, isn't it? You, for the others, you can go and read books. There are books on it. But what I'm trying to talk to you about is the approach to it, our modern day approach. Right? It's just that, understand your problem, know your problem, know that you've got a problem. And then the second part is to understand how this problem comes into being within you. Right? Because you are in control of things. Do not move the responsibility to others. Right? Supposing somebody is behave in a certain way, say certain things, and then you get upset, you get angry. Now, what we normally say, what do you normally do? We always say that he made me angry, isn't it? But can you change the whole situation and say, I'm now angry at him? That's the first part. The second part, if you can train yourself a lot better, know that I am now angry. The third part is to say, I'm now angry, can I let go of my anger or not? So this letting go is a very, very important thing, psychologically. So it is, learn how to let go often enough, then once you don't grasp onto it or to things, then you don't allow things to develop. And when it comes to negative things, if you let go often enough, it becomes a habit. Supposing a person who's been letting go a lot, and then goes for a walk in the park and steps on the dog poo, he lets go of that smelliness, that sort of things. And when you let go, then your mental energy can be made use of to do other things which are more skillful, as we call it. It means you can see, okay, I step on that, it's dirty, it's smelly, what shall I do? Clean the whole thing. You get upset with somebody whom you don't know, the dog owner, is no use. You get angry with the dog, it's even worse. Right? So, there's a way to solve problems. And the Buddha teaches how to solve problems through the Eightfold Path. Right? The right understanding, right thoughts, and then the way we live, how we live our life, our ethics, or you call it morality. So we've got to try to avoid a lot of things which cause problems to us. Right? And you talk about things, it's very simple, not to kill, not to steal, and all this. You guys know that too well. Right? It's being drummed into almost every Buddhist in the Buddhist country. Right? The five precepts. Right? And then there are certain things, how we earn our money and so on. Okay. There's certain things to avoid. Avoid evil. Then to purify your mind, we have got what we call samadhi. Right? Sila, samadhi, panya. We've got this samadhi, is the way you train your mind. Using the effort to bring up the mindfulness through your concentration. So that's the Eightfold Path. So try to follow it. They are not just words which are spoken by the Buddha. They are something which is to be followed and which you and I and other people can gain a lot of advantage from. When you become a Buddhist, you're actually investing a lot of time, right? You want to be Buddhist. So we can either become a Buddhist, invest our time in doing things which are not very important. What are things in Buddhism which are not so important? All the Southeast Asians should know well. Go to the temple, burn a lot of incense, isn't it? Now, I'm not saying that don't burn incense, but don't spend all the time burning incense and not do something to your mind. We can do something with our mind and then go to the temple and burn incense. So it's not wrong to do that, but the main thing is to purify the mind. And when you purify the mind, you can handle a lot of stress, a lot of things which are causing you problems. Okay? So I think I try to make it as simple as possible. Is it too complicated or not? No? So all of you, I'm talking to things which all of you do experience. Right? And you note it, if you read the Buddhist scripture, a lot of times Buddha will say, what's your problem? or somebody walked in and Buddha, I got this problem. And the Buddha would start to explain things to them in a very simple manner. And don't look at Buddhism as a very complex philosophy. It's only later days when people have got nothing much to do and they learn how to read and write properly, then they write a lot of these philosophical arguments. But during the Buddha's time, a lot of people don't know how to read and write. When they saw the Buddha, this is the advice the Buddha gave to them. Just try to do something to benefit yourself, and eventually you will benefit others. Okay?